Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. As Penn State gets ready to go to Indianapolis, Big Ten tournament tomorrow night, 8:30, the tip-off, 8 o'clock, the airtime from Gainbridge Fieldhouse, which is the third different name this building has had since I've been doing the Big Ten tournament. Okay, well. It's the Fieldhouse. And by the way, to be honest with you, it is the finest single-built basketball arena of the modern arenas out there. It's the single best basketball arena I've been in. Madison Square Garden is in a category to me all by itself. Old buildings like the Palestra are in a category by itself. But of the newer buildings that you see in the NBA and across the board, this one, in my opinion, is the best because every single element in this building was built with the idea that it's a basketball court, and it's not surprising that it's in Indiana because Indiana basketball means everything on the sports front. There's no getting around it. And it is a fabulous arena to play the tournament in. Now, next year, the tournament does go to the home of the Chicago Bulls, the United Center. That'll be next year. But this will actually be the first time I broadcast a game in Gainbridge Arena since 2016. You're like, how can that be? It's always in Indianapolis. It seems like all the time. Well, 17, the tournament was in Washington, and in 18, the tournament was in Madison Square Garden, and 19, the tournament was at the United Center, and 20, it was supposed to be at the Fieldhouse. Only the Wednesday night games were played. Penn State was scheduled to play Indiana Thursday. Indiana had beaten Nebraska, and of course, as we all know, they never got a chance to play. And then last year, the games were at Lucas Oil Stadium. So this is the first time I've been in the Fieldhouse to broadcast a game tomorrow night in 6 years. You know, just to give you some context, 6 years since the last time I broadcast a game in the Fieldhouse in Indianapolis because of the tournament moving around, and then it was when it was supposed to be there in back-to-back years, it was canceled. And then moved to Lucas Oil Stadium because of COVID. So it's just a different circumstance. But I will say this, tonight, when I get there, the great man Johnny Holiday and I will be heading over to St. Elmo's for dinner. So Johnny Holiday, the voice of Maryland, Johnny called this morning. He said, come on, what are we doing? He said, I'm getting in early. I said, right. So we're going to go to dinner tonight. All right, today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. You know? Now, if we were here, I'd say, Johnny, let's go to Penn's Tavern. That's and believe me, we'd have a great time there. All right, coming up, Joe DeLeon, FCS players, and the NFL draft next here on News Radio. Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great selection of pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. That's critical. Fabulous sales staff that will work with you. They want to save you money. And look, we're all trying to save every penny we can find right now. Customer service means everything. They will work hard to save you money. Trading's never been worth more. And a fabulous service department. Inspections, diagnostics, routine. They take care of it all. It's one-stop vehicle shopping. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Let's kick into the gear. We always talk about at the NFL draft, the combine, everything. It's always about the Power Five players. Well, there are a lot of really good players in FCS, and Joe DeLeon, former Rhodey Ram, follows it all. Welcome, Joe.
I'm doing great and excited that the combine's coming up because that means I get to talk about the draft for a whole week.
Yeah, exactly. And I am actually somebody that has been to your stadium in Kingston. So okay.
Really? What brought you to Kingston?
Penn State was in the Atlantic 10 at the time, and so they played Rhode Island at Old Keeney Gym over and over and over. And yes, I climbed that death-defying stair to get to the loft to broadcast games.
The new stadium's a lot better, but I've had to do workouts in Keeney before for off-season conditioning.
I'll bet. I'll bet that was something else. You do a lot with FCS along the way, and there's been more of an impact, I think, with FCS on the NFL draft as time has gone, as evidenced by guys like Carson Wentz, Trey Lance, and others. And let's get to the Super Bowl MVP, Cooper Kupp. All right? They're all FCS guys. Out of those guys that you're seeing in the current crop, who are guys that are going to emerge that we're going to start talking about once they go through this combine process?
Right. The big FCS guys that are going to be talked about, I think, the most in this class, the first one being Trevor Penning, the offensive lineman in Northern Iowa. He's been getting some buzz as a first-round prospect. I frankly thought that Spencer Brown, who was his teammate last year, who went later than that to the Buffalo Bills and was a really strong starter this year, I thought that he's a better prospect than Penning. But still, Penning, a really, really good tackle. He's tall. He's super mean. He's super aggressive. And we saw him knocking guys around, getting into fights at the Senior Bowl, which was really fun because he might have not been perfect the whole week, but he really showed that he has that aggressive mentality that you can't coach an offensive lineman. The other guy who is also at the Senior Bowl and starting to make a name for himself is Christian Watson, the North Dakota State wide receiver.
Yes.
We've started to get a chance to see how he does against FBS opponents. And this is a tall, long receiver, 6'4", 215 pounds roughly. And despite being tall, we see these guys that are a lot longer at receiver struggle to bend and cut in their routes. But Watson's able to do that. He's got this rare bend to him. He's got this rare transition ability that you don't get for these taller guys. And he's going to test really well at the combine. There's a good chance he tests in the 4.4s and he's going to do well in his jumps. But I'm a big fan of Christian Watson. And then the last one, this guy is so fun to me, Troy Anderson from Montana State. He was originally a quarterback and a running back when he first was at Montana State. They moved him over to defense. This was after he was an All-American at both positions.
Right.
They moved him over to defense. He plays linebacker. And despite being pretty green to the position, he was one of the best linebackers in the country at the FCS level. And not a lot of people knew who he was coming into the Senior Bowl, but you saw those flashes of what he can become if he gets some time to develop. But just a really tough, hard-nosed Montana kid that has some growing to do, but some really nice athletic traits.
Yes, I saw him in the playoffs. And not only it's interesting, as you know, Joe, you can take a safety, you can make him an outside linebacker, you can take an outside linebacker, bigger defensive end, and get more speed into your lineup. The fact that he was a quarterback and running back, what kind of advantage does he have playing a linebacking spot that he's got the speed to go with it that could be a cut above?
Yeah, I think that the big advantage is understanding the thought processes of quarterbacks.
Right.
Now, he's not going to be caught up with the NFL guys, but
sure,
he's going to know what they're looking at. He's going to be able to read blocking schemes and running plays easier because he knows what guys are looking for when they're reading holes in front of them. He doesn't obviously have as much time playing the linebacker position, so he just needs to get a little bit more comfortable with it. But having that offensive knowledge, which not every defensive guy has, every guy at one point or another played both positions, whether it was in Little League or in high school, but to be that recently removed from the college level, I think is really going to help him in understanding what he's looking at.
Oh, we're in an interesting time, especially with the transfer portal. There have been many years where players, for whatever reason, and personally have transferred, quote, down.
And because they could have been eligible right away at the FCS level. There's certain games that Penn State's played where you're looking and saying, okay, there are 11 guys in this roster that played FBS football. Are we seeing a trend where some of the FCS guys are now transferring in the portal up, and what's that doing to the FCS game?
Yeah, I think that what we're going to keep seeing every single year for the guys that aren't seniors that still have like a remaining year of eligibility, they're all going to test the portal. And those that are good enough are going to move up to big programs and have really strong impacts for teams and being high-impact players. Like Jabril Cox, who played at LSU and previously North Dakota State, he's a really good example because he ends up being a highly drafted player, but he had that ability to move up and showcase his skills at LSU. But at the same time, the portal, it balances itself out because for every 5 to 10 guys that can move up and go to a Power 5 program or a really good championship-level contending program, there are hundreds of players that are being caught under the radar because they can't break the starting lineup at a school like Illinois or Purdue or even like a Michigan, somewhere like that. Those that are stuck in the depth chart that are frustrated,
yeah,
that enter the portal, don't get the offers that they thought they were going to get, and then end up at an FCS program and starting to shine. So it all works itself out. There's a balance and equilibrium to the flow of things, but we are getting a lot more of those big-name guys moving up to the FBS level.
Are we seeing a better quality of play in FCS right now? Because, I mean, I'll sit there and I'll watch the playoffs, and I'm seeing North Dakota State, James Madison, Montana State, over and over again. But, for example, I mean, last year I had to drive down to Virginia Tech to do basketball. Couldn't fly at that point because it was last year. Mm-hmm. And so that means you got to drive right through Harrisonburg and past their state. That is as impressive an FCS stadium as I've seen. But I'm getting a sense the more places I go that there's more being put into facilities at that level. Is that true?
Yeah, I think for these bigger, higher quality FCS programs, they are spending a lot more money. And some of these programs are doing it because they want to move up. James Madison's moving to the Sun Belt.
Right.
There's that possibility that North Dakota State is going to try and jump sometime in the next couple of years, and they're heavily investing into their facilities. South Dakota State is making a heavy investment into their facilities. It's just like any level of football. If you want to compete and you want to recruit within your state and you also want to maybe steal some of those three-star recruits that are thinking between a mediocre group of five school or being a bench-riding player on a Power 5 team, you want to convince them to come play for you at the FCS level. You need to have the facilities that contend with those types of programs. I mean, the money's there for these state schools, but there definitely is starting to become more of an emphasis on building out those facilities so they're at a FBS quality level.
Joe, give me a couple guys that could be third-day draft guys but could bring with them some kind of value that the teams that pick them are going to be like pleasantly surprised. And they'll say, you know what? Joe DeLeon knew all about that guy. I'm glad we picked him.
Yeah, the one first player that I keep bringing up, and being an FCS guy, getting to see these guys up close, I keep pounding the table for Pierre Strong Jr.
Yes,
from South Dakota State.
Yes, he's really good player.
Very fantastic player. Did not get the Senior Bowl invite, which was super shocking to me, and I really thought this was going to be a kid that was going to get the nod because of, I mean, there's not a lot of depth at this running back group. I thought that because of what he did in college, it was enough for him. But he's quicker than fast. He's really explosive. He makes really nice big home run plays. And the reason why I bring up Pierre Strong Jr. is I think he's going to be this year's James Robinson, who, remember a couple of years ago, I was pounding the table for Robinson, saying that this kid should get drafted.
Yes.
Early day three, coming out of Illinois State. He was like a record-breaking guy. And then he goes undrafted. And when he started to pop off, I took my victory lap and was saying, like, hey, I was saying that this kid was going to be pretty good. He hasn't done anything since that first year, but I think Pierre Strong has that possibility to be a high-impact player. And then if I was to bring up another guy who is going to get drafted a little bit later that has a ton of potential, I think D'Angelo Malone from Western Kentucky isn't getting talked about enough right now. specifically because this edge class is just so deep and there's so many big names from big programs that are being talked about ahead of him. But D'Angelo Malone has really, really elite length. He's a very tall, long defensive end. And I think that he could turn himself into a really high-quality rotational pass rusher at the next level.
One point on Pierre Strong. I realize that North Dakota State, you know, the passing attack's good. I mean, South Dakota State, the passing attack for the Jackrabbits is good, not great. But they use him in the passing game, and I think that really helps his value at the next level because he is a good receiver out of the backfield.
Yeah, he's a fantastic receiver. He makes a lot of really good plays when they get the ball in his hand, and you saw how good this offense was in this past year. They were the most successful when he was playing his best, and I think back to I got to watch him live when I traveled to South Dakota State to watch them play North Dakota State.
Yeah.
And it was crazy how electric the stadium was when he scored a long 75-yard touchdown. He is a juice bringer type guy, and I just think he's getting pushed down on some people's radars because there's just so many other recognizable running back names that we were exposed to this past year that we see at these big programs. It's easy to forget about a guy like Pierre Strong Jr.
Joe, appreciate your time very much. Great insight.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Joe DeLeon covers FCS for the Bleav podcast, and great to have him in the show. We'll get him back before the draft to talk about some of the great FCS prospects that are out there. FCS means so much. Kevin Herr, by the way, our own, the suit, happens to be one of the FCS voters every single week. Which explains why when I look at it, I go, okay, how'd that team get honorable mention? No, just kidding. All right, coming up next half hour, Neil Kulong will talk with him. David Eckert from On3.com at 4:06 today. We'll close out with Rich Scarsella as well in the final half hour. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Ladies and gentlemen, the King of Kings, the Prince of All, Neil Kulong.
I am back here again. I am Mr. Staple, and I Bleav I've been serving that community since, what, 2011? Is that how long we've been doing this?
2012. This is our 11th year of the show that started in February of 2012.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
That's spring.
Mm-hmm, that's spring. So it's almost 10 years, and I have aged you dramatically in that time, but for which I apologize.
It wasn't you, it was somebody. I'd much rather be here, I know that.
Well, we're thrilled to have, Bleav me. If I didn't enjoy the conversation every week, you wouldn't be here every week, so... I thoroughly enjoy it. That's why you're on all the time. You're a blast, and you know what you're talking about. So let's get to the quarterback part. The three names have been thrown out there. If you're looking for that temporary fix, nothing long term, Jameis Winston, Teddy Bridgewater, and Mitchell Trubisky. Now, the one that makes sense to me is Bridgewater, but what do you think?
I think Mason Rudolph was Mason Rudolph last year when they signed Mason Rudolph to an extension, gave him $2 million to be the team's backup quarterback. I don't think there's – financially speaking, the odds of Mason Rudolph reaching free agency in 2022, last year, right before the draft, short of an extension from the Steelers, odds of him going to free agency were excellent. You know, there wasn't going to be a longer extension offer for him. And I don't really know who in the market would have, you know, fallen all over themselves to sign him.
Well, that's what gets me, Neil, is that there are moments where you and I know that a team is only bidding against itself.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And they, in my opinion, and a lot of these things, it's a matter of perspective. This really depends on how you want to look at it. If you enter this conversation not wanting Mason Rudolph to be the starting quarterback, we can talk about Teddy Bridgewater all day. We can talk about Jameis Winston all day. I don't blame you. I don't think that Mason Rudolph is especially good. I don't think that he should be your plan to start a quarterback. I just know that the Steelers extended him and gave him a signing bonus. So they paid him $2 million up front to be the team's starting quarterback in 2022. There's no other reason for them to extend him. On top of that, they're going to give $2.6 million, which is the original round tender level, for Dwayne Haskins. They're going to retain him as well. In what world does it make sense for them to go out and get another veteran quarterback to bring in? Because, you know, you just set the market at Rudolph, he's on the cap for $4 million. His base salary is $3 million. If Haskins is at $2.6 million, what's the market for the next quarterback that you get? Are you going to pay him more than Rudolph and essentially have thrown the $2 million away that you had no reason to spend at all last year except to have him in place? Or are you going to go under Dwayne Haskins? You're going to sign somebody to be your third-string quarterback. Nobody wants to do that. Your third-string quarterback is preparing and running, maybe running at the combine right now. He might not have even been invited.
Right.
But that's who your third-string quarterback is going to be.
That's right.
They'll draft one, and then they're going to sign probably somebody with Pittsburgh ties somehow or other, probably a smaller school guy that didn't get drafted for, you know, a couple of very obvious reasons. He's going to be the fourth string, preseason week four hero against Carolina. That's just modus operandi for the Steelers. Their quarterback position, short of the one they're going to draft, which I bet money right now they're going to draft the quarterback, that's the only question that really is up in the air. They're not going to trade assets to get a quarterback on a one-year deal. They're not going to sign one who wouldn't sign for anything less than $10 million. They're not going to bring in a $10 million quarterback. You've got Roethlisberger's cap hit is something like $10 million this year to not be on the team. Rudolph is at four. Haskins would be at 2.6. So you're looking at 16.6 in three quarterbacks, and you're only playing one of them. You want to add more to that to bring in a fourth? There's just no financial sense to that at all. It's just simply not going to happen. And the fact that it is the talking point around Pittsburgh, what veteran quarterback they're going to bring in, it only screams that the level of confidence in Mason Rudolph is, in my opinion, fairly so, very, very low. He hasn't proved himself to be somebody that you're going to base your game plan around. They're going to have to scheme up ways to make an offense successful without the quarterback being the overriding factor of that. And we'll see how well that works out. But all of these decisions were decided last year. They knew that they were going to have Haskins available to tender, and if they extend Rudolph, they don't have to guarantee to start a free agent from the 2022 class or a rookie. That's really why they did what they did. This way they can draft the rookie quarterback and bring him along. Wherever they draft him, I don't know. That's up in the air. You hope that they draft a future starter. But Rudolph is there to serve as the starting quarterback for this year. And barring something remarkable happening to his abilities, probably just 1 year. And then he can go into free agency. And the hope is that whoever they draft takes over after that.
I think you have to look at the next two draft classes and ask you what quarterbacks are going to be available. I don't mean this one. I mean the next two, I mean in 23 and 24. So who's available? Well, Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud would be two guys that would be available in next year's draft because they will have each completed their third year. And there are going to be some other guys that you may be looking at saying, okay, will we be in position to get any one of these five guys over a two-year period? That's the question you have to ask before you go with somebody that you think is a short-term two- or three-season solution. That's how I look at it.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that, mostly because, to be honest with you, you could have given Duck Hodges a call and offered him veteran minimum to come be the starting quarterback this year if you want to go out and get Stroud. That's what it's going to take. Mason Rudolph isn't going to lose 15 games.
Right.
You know, the team
could.
Is not going to lose 15 games.
But
Duck
could.
Absolutely could. I wouldn't put that past him at all. They would be competitive for one of those quarterbacks. I agree with the philosophy behind it. What they're saying is, in my opinion, the quarterbacks of this class are not Trevor Lawrence level. They don't have the arm talent of Zach Wilson.
No.
There are guys that are going to fall to where Pittsburgh is this year. They weren't going to last year. Five quality earlier rather than later starters were in last year's draft. And there was nobody after that. And we see that now. This year, my opinion, you're going to have reasonable quarterbacks probably available in the back end of round one. I think more quarterbacks will go earlier in the draft. People think they will because, well, that happens every year when they say, it's a bad quarterback class. Yeah, I know. That's why only four of them will get drafted in the first round. Okay, it's quarterback. You need one. Pittsburgh knows that now better than a lot of teams do. I am thinking what they're saying is we feel there will be a quality quarterback available at 20. If not, there are guys that probably shouldn't be first-round picks because they're not going to be ready right away. We know he's not going to be able to play in year one. In other words, they're drafting him to redshirt him. If he can't play, the Steelers in particular, if he can't play in year one, they don't want to draft him in the first round.
Right.
So a second-round guy, though, you could see that going either way. It might be a guy that has this issue or that issue or something it is that they need to work out, plus the lack of those elite kinds of skills. I can't tell you where I'm sitting, who that would be. I look at a guy like Desmond Ridder, though. I could see both why a team would take him in the first round and why they would not take him in the first
round.
That's right. I would lean more toward that. That's the primary trade-up target, the type of guy that you trade back into the first round to get at 29, 30, 31, somewhere in there. I wouldn't be surprised if that's where he ends up. But for Pittsburgh, I don't think that's necessarily off the table for them either. They could make a move like that. While mock drafts are certainly not, you know, indicative of accuracy, I have seen thousands of them at this point. And I think Matt Corral dropped to 20 in some of them in a way that makes sense. You could see this happening or that happening. I think they'd love to have him. He'd be great for what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
He might not be a year one guy right away,
right.
But he could be if they wanted him to be. I think he could be. Those options are going to be there. So because of that, I don't know what they're going to do in round one, and that would mean I'm not really sure what they could do in round two either. But they're probably going to be able to find a quarterback who's okay. At the two spots they have right now drafting in those rounds. They're not going to mess around with the veteran quarterback, and we know that because that's exactly why they signed Mason Rudolph last year, so they don't have to go through the mental gymnastics that it would take to guess. And then add into it, maybe they feel next year's class is absolutely stacked, and wherever they'll be, there's going to be a better option for them, and they'd rather address it then. It very well could be the case.
Yes, because you and I both know that every year there are probably 15 to 20 legitimate first-round picks that would be considered first-round picks in any year.
Exactly.
And there are 32 picks in the first round. The quarterbacks in this year's draft are not among the best 32 players, but they're going to be first-round pick quarterbacks because people need the position. I mean, to be honest with you, Jahan Dotson, who might be a late first-round pick, and Jaquan Brisker, who might be a second-round pick, the two Penn State guys that are in the front of the draft, are both better football players and without injury will have better long-term careers than any of the quarterbacks. But they're going to get picked behind the quarterbacks because of the position.
Right. And all of that, I put it very simply like this. The Steelers, if they were to, quote unquote, reach on a quarterback at 20, it's because that player isn't going to be there at 52 when they draft again.
Right.
It's not always a question of the vertical column. We line up every player and rank them 1 through 375. Teams don't do that.
I love that. People think that's how they do it. No, you can't.
Yeah, it sounds really easy. If you think that you are the czar of a team's draft and you're drafting against the entire league, and you, in other words, you're putting the player ahead of the team, sure, you can do that. When you're inside of a war room, when you've got an army of scouts and analysts, you have all this information. The decision has to be made. You can't break it down like that. You have to know what you need. You have to know what you want. You have to know what is going to impact you now, next year, 3 years down the line. There are way more factors that go into that than what you think the difference between number 20 and number 27 is. It just isn't any at that point. That feeds into exactly what you said. They don't even grade first-round guys like that.
No.
There might be 20 guys they feel are legitimate first-round picks based on the team's philosophy. They set that. They say these are the things that our first-round picks have because this is how we build a football team. It is not pure talent. The player does not go above that. And that's the common misunderstanding of all this when people get into value discussions. Well, it's a great value pick. It's the only cornerback that they could draft at that spot. You know, things like that, it's not that you want the position – more so than you want the player. But at the same time, if you said, as an organization, we need to invest in a cornerback because we don't think this guy's going to get any better. We know this guy's got a chronic injury. We're going to lose him to free agency because he's nuts and he's going to ask for 10 times more than what he's worth. Those guys are all going to walk. We need a cornerback in 2023. It's not just about 2022. So if this guy is here, we grade him not first round, but back end of first round into round two. That bucket is a lot bigger. Call it 21 through 55. Those guys have a lot more in common than 20 does with 15. That's just the way players are. And the biggest differentiating factor in first round picks are those elite physical traits, the things that you can't coach. So, yes, you do take the 6'5 wide receiver over the 5'9 wide receiver because he's a lot bigger. If he's doing the same things, you want the big guy. All things being equal, the bigger guy is who you're going to take. So it's not a question of how good that smaller receiver is versus the bigger one. It's a question of what's more rare, what has more intrinsic value to you. They break down those kinds of things. It's not about, you know, this player versus that player in a skill sense. It's what we need first and foremost. It's what our franchise says we want in these rounds of picks. And then what do we need now and in the future? And on top of it, we like this guy. The other guy's kind of a jerk. We're not a big fan of him.
Exactly.
So we're going to invest in the guy we like.
See, that's the part of the combine that we don't see. That is the critical part where you sit down with them face to face. And look, some of the questions are stupid. Just sit down and talk to people. Right? Just sit down. Right? You know, if you were a tree.
If you have any personal skill at all, to be honest, I'll go off on a quick rant on this. I'll shut up. I promise.
It's the moronic Oprah question to Katharine Hepburn. If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? Right? And I'm thinking, you're getting paid $1 billion a year to ask that stupid question? Really?
Well, you have people who make a lot more money that put together those questions, and you have people that barely make anything executing it. That's more of the problem.
I know.
If the person that's asking the question isn't aware of why they're asking them, it's going to come off poorly, and you're not going to get anywhere. You want to dig. You want to find information. Right.
Give me your rant.
But you can chat them up. I mean, that's really it. It's more the idea of the disparity in personnel at the combine versus pro days when they take them out to dinner. The combine is great for checking out medicals.
Yeah.
It's probably more of what it is.
Sure.
You want to make sure that the guy is running about the speed you think he's running in film. You want to make sure that he's still in shape. If he, you know, goes to a weigh-in and it looks like he's gained 30 pounds, that's not the player we think he would be. We need him to be lighter than this. A couple pounds makes a difference. You know, they need to be aware of how seriously the prospect is taking this whole process. So the dog and pony show part, it is important, not in the rank and file way people think that it is. It doesn't matter who the fastest is. They want to know, does this guy's speed match what we think it is? We mark him as fast, okay? Fast to us is 4.32, whatever it is. He runs a 4.34. Okay, yeah, he's probably about right. He runs a 4.45. That's totally different. In football terms, he's not as fast as he thought he was.
Sure.
Maybe he is still hurt. Maybe he did put on more weight. But they're sitting down for questions, and it's not your high-level executives that are running those meetings, like the speed dating conversations that they have.
Right.
Some of them, yes, but they only have so much time, and they can't be everywhere at once. So to get everybody, they have to fan out. You know, in the Steelers case, you know, say Colbert, Tomlin, Canada, down and down the list, you're getting into kind of lower level guys that might not have the nuance or personal skills that you'd want to really get a sense of who somebody is as a person. And then, yes, you get some guys that will totally mess up the question, and other teams that will have them ask terrible questions. Maybe they didn't even understand when they said, look, ask him this, ask him that.
Right.
They didn't understand that. If they can't kind of, you know, riff with the moment, it's going to come off really poorly, and you're not going to get anything out of it.
I'm sure that happens a lot. I'm the coach and general manager. The two of us go in there, we talk to these guys, and then we compare notes.
Honestly,
I said, I don't need somebody else to do this. I can figure it out myself and have somebody in there to help balance me off in case I miss something and they picked up on something or vice versa.
They approach it in volume. They want to talk to everybody who's there to some degree, and they might not be able to get everybody in their pro days the same personnel. So if Tomlin talks to candidate A, Colbert talks to candidate B, they might want to chat them up again later on, but maybe Canada does it this time to get a third perspective of it. Their top people are going to be spread because they need to spend most of their time with the most valuable assets who are out there and available. They're investing three times as much money in a first round pick than they are in the third.
Right.
They're going to put more of their attention into scouting the guys that they could get in the first round.
Yep. So what's the rant?
One. I think I just gave you like three of them.
Okay. Good. I just want to make sure.
It's the idea is really more. You have to understand that the level of rank and file that goes into the combine. They bring a lot of people. Teams bring a lot of people to the combine, and they're there to interview. So your low-level guy gets maybe a mid-round pick, and they're talking to him. I don't know exactly what comes out of that, but that low-level guy is probably not going to be as savvy and as polished as your 30-year general manager is, as your 18-year head coach is. So you can see why questions come off as stupid, and sometimes for my part, just knowing what, some of the more famous dumb questions that were asked, it was never the team's general manager that asked it.
No.
It was like an assistant scout.
Exactly.
Some, pardon me, but some meathead that doesn't speak to people on a regular basis like that, They're interviewing them. They're not giving a report on them. So it's a different environment, and that can happen. You can see why that would happen.
Neil Kulong, Reginald Walker, next half hour, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.